Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. We're going to continue with the topic we've been exploring recently, gun control. Since my conversation with District Attorney Bill Fitzpatrick last week, the NY Safe Act has become state law. At the national level, the debate on possible legislation continues to ramp up. It's far from clear what will happen there. Some of the state law provisions have already taken effect. The definition of what constitutes an assault rifle has become more expansive than it was before, and consequently, the sale of certain previously legal rifles is now prohibited. Other aspects of the law will be taking effect in a couple months, such as the provision that private party gun sales must undergo background checks and forbidding the sale of magazine clips that hold more than 7 rounds. Still others, such as the background check for ammunition purchases, are about a year off. And there's a whole host of reporting requirements regarding sales and mental health issues as they relate to gun ownership that still need to be worked out administratively. Both Professor Robert Spitzer, my guest from 2 weeks ago, and Bill Fitzpatrick last week saw some things in the state law that they thought might help to lower gun violence. The provisions regarding mental health and the access to guns, for example. They also pointed out some problems. Bill Fitzpatrick, for example, pointed to a future bureaucratic nightmare, as he called it, for the state, as it dealt with implementing all the state's laws' reporting aspects. My guest today has a more sharply edged view of this law. Scott Armstrong runs Armstrong Communications, a political consulting firm. He's a sportsman and a gun enthusiast, and in the past was the NRA's state lobbyist. He's not a fan of the NY Safe Act. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Well, there's a lot of argument about the appropriate interpretation of the Second Amendment, and I'd like to – I know that's an important issue, but I'd like to largely set that aside if we could and focus on this law as a set of policies. And if you could start by – summarizing for me what your biggest objections are to this law as a piece of policy change.
Well, Grant, I think the biggest thing for me is for the first time we're seeing a criminal sanction on law-abiding gun owners should they not, by force of law, get rid of firearms, either through sale out of state, destruction, or registration, because many gun owners will not register firearms. You're talking about an administration that started this public conversation with a radio interview where the governor mentioned confiscation of firearms was on the table. That being the case and setting the table and going from there in the negotiation as if it were a negotiation really scared a lot of people, because law-abiding gun owners, who are the ones that are impacted most by gun control laws, are not the ones that are causing crime. In many cases, they're preventing or stopping crime. And so I think, you know, to have a Class E felony in some cases and a Class A misdemeanor in others for certain provisions of this law, for the first time you're taking hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of New Yorkers who are gun owners who, if they don't do something by sanction of law by a date certain, will become a criminal themselves. And that's very objectionable. We did nothing wrong.
So to follow that up, you're referring, as I understand it, then to the provision that if you own an assault rifle that was previously legal prior to the passage of this law, and that would be one that had one of these aspects that now you can't have a gun that has even one. Before, you could have one of these aspects like a pistol grip or a foldable stock or whatever, that you've got a year to register that. Or then be in this category. That's what you're talking
about.
That
is correct. The other criminal sanction is ownership and use of what they're deeming a high-capacity magazine, something over 7 rounds, which on its face is ridiculous, and those who voted for the bill know it. Very, very few firearms come with a 7-round magazine, even commercially available. So to even think that that's possible is just faulty thinking.
I want to come back to the 7-round clip issue in a minute, but let me stick with this problem of that you see with the registering. I mean, let me be devil's advocate here. So what's the problem? I mean, if I'm the state, I'm giving you an entire year to register this. And what is the concern about registering it?
Well, the concern is when you have an administration who has all but admitted they pushed this bill for political reasons, started the conversation with mentioning that confiscation or forced buyback is on the table. They very quickly stopped talking about that because of the uproar that occurred and the vote counting that occurred in the state legislature. if those things were on the table, and they certainly were part of the Assembly Democratic Majority package, because that's actually been the memo that had that provision has been publicly disclosed, that becomes an entirely different matter. So in the mind of most gun owners, if you're registering for the sake of registering, there's no data that's being collected. There's no purpose other than to know who has these. If you're doing that for an administration that started the conversation with the words confiscation or forced buyback, that concerns a great number of people. And I think you will probably see a lot of citizens not comply with the law, quite frankly. They view it as unconstitutional. They view it as unfair. And they know, having done nothing wrong themselves, the law is inherently unfair.
So let me ask this question, and perhaps it's already been answered, but is there anything about the law that you like, that you think is good?
Yeah, I think some of the additional criminal sanctions, which is an area of law that the NRA and myself personally and a lot of gun owners have supported, we're getting pretty tired of having the sanctions land on us as law-abiding gun owners every time a criminal uses a gun in the commission of a crime. New York state law is notoriously lax on punishment for gun crimes. Short sentences pled out quite often, charges of unlawful possession of a firearm quickly dismissed by many judges, particularly in urban areas where arguably that crime is the worst statistically. We get very frustrated at that happening because we know that the restrictions that come down to satisfy the general public's fear over gun crimes land squarely on the law-abiding gun owners like myself who did nothing wrong and don't use their firearms in the commission of a crime.
So that piece is something that you are in agreement then with the district attorney about, because he mentioned the increased penalties being something that the DAs had lobbied for as well.
It's critical. And you know, frankly, the NRA has spent millions of dollars funding certain district attorneys' prosecutorial jurisdictions to bump up their efforts to get crimes elevated to the federal level. It's been done in Virginia quite extensively. They had a 40% drop in gun crime after a year of this program being in place, because the federal crimes have teeth. If you commit a crime with a firearm and you're charged federally, you go away for a good long time. That's not the case in New York. And it probably should be noted that in the negotiations in the state assembly, the assembly Democrats refused to include a convicted gun criminal registry that would be made available online so that you would know if you had neighbors that were convicted of a crime, using a gun in the commission of a crime. Assembly Democrats wouldn't even consider it as part of this package.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Scott Armstrong, a lobbyist and political communications expert and an opponent of the NY Safe Act, the recently passed piece of gun control legislation. Well, let's come back to the magazine issue that you brought up before. What is the big problem, though, for gun owners in having 7 rounds instead of 10? I mean, why is that a huge limit on their ability to enjoy their activities here?
It really falls to two things, Grant. One is that as a political matter for the bill, it was nothing more than political grandstanding. This administration wanted to have the most restrictive bill first, before the president, before any other governor, before the Congress introduced it. They tried for 5. They landed at 7 in the middle. Fine, that's politics. As a practical matter, this is nothing more than an absolute nuisance for any gun owner that owns a semi-automatic firearm, which happens to be about 75% of the pistol market and about half of the long gun market. New York State already has a 10-round limit and has for a number of years. And the market finally caught up with New York because most pistols have between 12 and 15 as a standard magazine size. For about 18 months after the 10-round limit was passed in New York, it was nearly impossible to buy a semi-automatic handgun in New York because no one commercially made the 10-round magazine. Well, we're going to go through the same thing again, where it's going to be virtually impossible to buy anything that has a magazine in any semi-automatic pistol that fits the size. In the interim, you're only to load 7 rounds, is what the state has said. Now, that's just ridiculous on its face. Are you telling me that at 7 rounds you're law-abiding, but if you load that 8th round, you've now committed a misdemeanor in the eyes of New York state law? That's just ridiculous on its face. It's nothing more than a nuisance to gun owners, a nuisance to the mom-and-pop gun shops that have a lot of inventory that are now rendered useless. They can't sell them. And to all the chain stores like the Gander Mountains and the Bass Pro Shops, all that stuff's going out of state now to sell elsewhere because New York State had to be the first, had to be the biggest and the baddest on gun control. And it really doesn't make one iota of difference. As I tell people, as a certified instructor, you do not want to be on the receiving end of a firearm, period. It doesn't matter if it's bullet one, bullet seven, bullet 30. You don't want to be there. And so as a practical matter, it's just simply a nuisance on the law-abiding gun owners in New York State. And as a law enforcement matter, will make no difference whatsoever.
Well, what about the counter-argument, though, and to draw on what you said at the beginning, that the market will catch up with us? So there's going to be a transition period, yes. That's granted. But again, New York's a pretty big state, so that just like you had a movement to 10, you'll get a movement to 7. You don't see that happening?
I don't. I see a lot of people, you know, frankly, not complying with that. I've asked my friends in law enforcement, so what's justifiable cause for investigating someone who carries a handgun legally with a New York State pistol license with a loaded handgun, carry concealed? What exactly constitutes probable cause to find out how many rounds is loaded in their magazine? It's just, you know, magazines aren't cheap. Ammunition's not cheap these days. I kind of joked that maybe nobody can afford to load more than 7 rounds right now, so maybe it's a moot point. But it just strikes gun owners almost universally as a complete nuisance, 100% politically motivated law that has no bearing on a firearm, how it's used, really for proponents of the law, many of which have never fired a gun, don't know anything technical about a gun, don't know what they're talking about. It's frankly offensive from a technical perspective to most gun owners that such a silly law was passed, and that's really the best word for it, is silly. It means nothing. I don't think you're going to find any criminal stopping at 7 when he loads up his magazine and knock over the 7-Eleven that night.
Come back to something you mentioned just a couple minutes ago as well. I'm wondering whether some of the objection to this isn't also being driven by a concern that these changes will, in the end, drive the prices up on a lot of things, that the inability to buy ammunition over the internet, the change in the compliance with the 7 versus 10 rounds, that all this will mean that firearms and ammunition is going to get a lot more expensive in New York State. Is that part of the concern?
That is part of the concern. And, you know, for instance, you know, competitive shooters who may have, you know, they may have 10 handguns that they use for different types of competition. Assuming they have anywhere between 8 and 10 magazines that cost about $30 a piece, they'll now have to replace every single one of those for something that is substandard for the leagues, the national leagues they shoot in. For what? You know, these people are competitive shooters that spend thousands of dollars traveling, restaurants, hotels, competitive fees, not to mention the handgun equipment that they have. And now they're going to be forced because of a political deal to replace all that, and they can't even shoot within the national established competition leagues because they all require 10-round magazines minimum for those. So the whole thing is just silly and ridiculous on its face. It's 100% political from that aspect of it. And like I said, I just can't imagine any criminal worrying about whether he has 7 rounds in his magazine or not. And, you know, folks like myself have spent a lot of time calculating on what the time and financial cost for compliance is going to be, and it's not cheap.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations. We're continuing the program's recent focus on gun control, and my guest is Scott Armstrong, a gun enthusiast and a former lobbyist for the NRA in the state of New York. I've got a more general question that taps into some of these things, and it has to do about the issue of the law's effects on law-abiding gun owners and the impressions of other people when they think about these issues. I think there's an impression among some of the folks who support this law that the law-abiding citizens who are really going to be the most deeply and negatively affected by this law, and those who are the most vocal in opposition to it, are a particular kind of gun owner that who, again, to their impression, might seem, for lack of a better word, a little nutty, perhaps even dangerous. The stereotype that I'm reaching for here would be someone who owns a lot of assault rifles and who's going to their local range and just blasting the heck out of everything and, you know, making complaints that we're headed down the road to socialism and tyranny. Who is this law going to really affect the most?
Well, couple different answers there. First of all, let me educate folks a little bit because there is a lot of misinformation and misperception out there. The only thing involving this bill is a semi-automatic firearm. That means for every pull of the trigger, one round is expended out of the gun. Most people that aren't firearm enthusiasts that I've encountered and have asked me about this bill are under the impression that they're outlawing machine guns. There's all this hyperbole on the national news media about high capacity, high powered, spring bullets, 6 rounds a second. I'm a pretty good shooter. I don't think I can expend 6 rounds a second with my index finger out of a semi-automatic handgun or rifle. So I think that impression is correct. I think to a lot of people uneducated about guns that they're viewed as fringe. But I'll tell you, the AR-15 and all its variants is the number one most popular commercially sold rifle on the market in America today and has been for years. It is everyday people like myself who own them. Some people use them for target shooting. Some people use them for competition. Anybody involved in three-gun competition, very popular nationally, must have one of these rifles. As a practical matter, ammo has become enormously expensive. Between the run on it because of all the threats, state and federally, it is off the shelves. And frankly, due to the war effort, ammunition has become harder to come by and much more scarce and certainly more expensive. A year ago, a single round of 223 ammo, which is what this rifle shoots, would have cost about 29 cents per round. It's now up around a dollar, so about a threefold increase in just a year. People are not spraying on the range and just shooting willy-nilly. The people that invest in these rifles, which generally start at about $800 and go up into the thousands from there, these are not fools. They're serious shooters. They're competitive shooters. I'll tell you, a number of them are law enforcement and prior military because they have familiarity with fully automatic versions of this firearm, which is looks the same but much different in its capabilities. These are responsible, serious shooters who have made a significant investment in money and time. So I could see why people would think that, but there's an awful lot of misperception out there when it comes to firearms ownership.
Let me shift a little bit now and ask you a couple of questions about the NRA's response to the Bush for to the push for gun control so far. And one might argue that from a tactical point of view, the NRA has been shooting itself in the foot a bit. I'm thinking about some of Wayne LaPierre's early responses and how those were received. I'm thinking about the web video that attacked the protection that the president's children get. What's your sense of the NRA's response so far?
I've known Wayne LaPierre for over 15 years. He's a good gentleman. He's a family man. And I can understand how some of his mannerisms sometimes take people aback a little bit. But when you listen to what he said, and I've provided a lot of people who on social media were railing against and essentially repeating the mainstream media's interpretation of Wayne's comments, when I sent them the transcript of what he said, they generally agreed with it. Not for nothing, Newtown, Connecticut, which I think was probably ground zero for the impetus of all this. And, you know, I get it. I have kids. I actually went to Newtown, very involved with the scouting movement. Several of the kids killed there were involved with scouts. And I led a scout leader contingent to the funeral of Benjamin Wheeler, who was a Cub Scout, age 6, who was killed. I get it. Nobody wants these in the hands of the wrong people. Of any type. I have family in law enforcement and not just one. I have multiple family members in law enforcement. I understand. I get it. And that's why it's so frustrating, I think, Grant, is because a lot of this regulation lands on those of us who do get it, who do practice safe and responsible gun ownership, and who do obey the law. But I think as far as the NRA's response, Newtown, Connecticut has adopted Wayne LaPierre's stance, essentially. They have asked for permanent police presence at their schools. And that's essentially what Wayne LaPierre was advocating, was armed presence of some nature. It's going to be different strokes for different folks. Texas and Colorado have offered carry concealed firearms classes for teachers. They've been sold out at every turn. I just saw a school district in the Midwest today purchase 14 AR-15s to mount on campus for its own security force in case they ever had an active shooter situation. Let's hope they don't. For all the criticism the NRA has received, an awful lot of school districts seem to be quietly considering what they've essentially recommended and are following suit with having some type of armed presence. We have it at banks. We have it at retail stores. We have it in the malls. Why would we not want to protect our most precious commodities, which is our kids? So for all the, you know, the NRA is an easy whipping boy. We know that. That's fine. We serve a certain constituency. We don't answer to everybody. We answer to our membership. And our membership is pretty pure in what it believes as far as law-abiding Americans have a right to own a firearm.
Well, let me pick up on something that you also mentioned sort of tangentially there at the beginning. It does seem like the media has been grabbing some of the most extreme voices on the right and putting them on the airwaves. Do you worry about the image of gun owners that this is spreading and how it could hurt the cause of a more reasoned kind of opposition?
I do. But I'll tell you, I think the perception has changed considerably for the better towards gun ownership over the last couple decades. And I'll tell you why I think that way. One, the National Rifle Association, in the most recent Gallup poll just a couple weeks ago, is polling considerably higher than the general public's perception of either Congress or the mainstream media.
Doesn't get you very far.
Congress is an easy one. But mainstream media, but, you know, those are essentially our two political opponents, is mainstream national media and Congress. And, you know, NRA had an approval rating 54% nationally. I'm sure it's quite a bit less in New York, but New York's a very blue state. But this is an issue that does cross a lot of lines. I think if you take a look at what the Journal News just put themselves and all the gun owners through down in the Hudson Valley with the disclosure of public disclosure and Google map ability of pistol license holders, it crosses all party lines. It crosses all spectrum. You had 40% of the people exposed down there as law enforcement or prior law enforcement who, when their home address is disclosed, they got a lot of enemies sitting in jail whose buddies aren't in jail, that they're now very afraid for their family's safety. 12% of the people exposed down there were victims of violent crime or domestic abuse and were trying to, you know, had armed for themselves for protection. Gun control is not a winner politically. The Democrats in Congress had learned their lessons in the 1990s, apparently through Senator Feinstein. They came back for more today, and they're going to have to learn the lesson all over again. But what you have is concealed carry weapons. There's now 40 states in the United States that allow for concealed carry. That's up dramatically over the last 10 years. At the same time that gun ownership has increased, gun violence has decreased substantially. Virtually every case, all but two states that now have concealed carry weapons laws, their crime rate for violent crime went down substantially after the passage of the law. So I think you have a more broad acceptance of gun ownership in general as states have moved towards arming citizens if they chose to be armed. And the crime rate has responded beautifully where that's tried. In the big cities that can't stand guns like New York and Chicago and D.C., where they're all but outlawed, these are some of our highest crime rates, even though gun ownership is extremely rare in those jurisdictions.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations. We're talking about gun control, and my guest is Scott Armstrong. Well, there's one aspect about the rhetoric of many of those who are in support of this law in New York that has caught my ear. Governor Cuomo will be a prime example of what I'm about to say, and that's that the proposed standard for evaluating what is a reasonable type of and use for a firearm seems to have become the killing of a deer. And you could argue that deer have had a particularly rough go of it in the last couple of weeks. But what do you make of that? Is that the correct standard to be thinking about? How to judge what's reasonable and not reasonable?
No, it isn't. You know, hunting is not part of the Second Amendment. And I know that's not the topic today, but you will not find hunting mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. That's not the proper standard. I think, you know, you have to look statistically at what people have, what they've owned, and what they've been responsible with. My favorite statistic coming out of the argument in New York is in 2011, there were 759 homicides by a firearm in New York State. A whole grand total of five of them were committed by a rifle of any type. And they don't break it down to what they deem an assault rifle, which, as a former Army officer, I will tell you what they're calling an assault rifle is not, in fact, an assault rifle and would never see military service. Statistically, these are not the guns. So if you're selling this as a crime control package, you are willfully misleading the New York public, in my estimation. Statistically, these are not the guns that are used. Every once in a while they are. Certainly the tragedy in Webster was used. But this gentleman was also prevented from buying a gun, as was the gun, the criminal in the Newtown case. He was stopped from buying a firearm himself. And in both cases, they either had to have a straw buyer or steal the firearm from a family member in order to commit their heinous crime. You know, statistically, these are not. But it's a hearts and minds issue. I'm well aware of that. I'm in the communications business. As we like to say, if you're explaining, you're losing. And that's really the uphill battle that gun owners have, I think, is It's a highly emotional issue. I understand that. I've seen the other end of it. I never want to see anybody hurt with a firearm or killed with a firearm. But I also think that trampling people's rights for political gain, while maybe not the same measure of tragedy, is tragic in and of itself. As I've said, this New York legislation is a travesty born of a tragedy. And they, for the first time, are sanctioning law-abiding gun owners as potential criminals. And that's a big change in this debate.
Let me ask you a question about Governor Cuomo's political future in regards to this. Do you think that this law will have a particularly energizing effect on conservatives across the country should Governor Cuomo decide to try for the presidency? I mean, I'm wondering whether he perhaps has made similar miscalculations to what I would regard as some of the miscalculations perhaps the NRA made early on in this, that he's made some as well politically.
The governor's political team is top shelf. They're very smart. Their polling is fantastic. Their advertising is fantastic. I do not know what they're looking at. I read polls myself for my business. I have not seen anything that would lead me to the conclusion that this is going to help him for a national office run. It may help clear the field on some liberal credentials early on in the Democratic primary process. But, boy, it's a big one that has a very large second edge to it when you get out there on the national scene. And if you get past the very blue border of New York and you start getting into the Midwest and West, you got plenty of Democrats in that, involved in that primary process who want nothing to do with this gun control package, and it's going to be very tough to swallow. It's probably one of the most divisive issues out there. It's one of the most defining issues on a candidate and on people's minds, and nothing draws Democrats, labor, traditional opponents to what you consider more traditional or right-of-center issues than gun control. I always like to remind people that Al Gore did not lose 2000 because of Florida and the recounts. He lost it because he lost his home state of Tennessee and its electoral votes because he was perceived as anti-gun. The man could not carry his own home state because of gun control. That's why he never became president of the United States. And, as soon as just a few days ago, Bill Clinton kind of gave a lecture to everybody in the Democratic Party about don't take gun owners for granted and don't stir the pot. We've been a sleeping giant for a while because we've had it pretty good for 10 plus years. But we're out there, we're active, and it's not just Republicans. Plenty of Democrats, plenty of independents are law-abiding, committed gun owners. And this cuts right to the core of what they view as a very significant historical symbol of their freedom. And when you start taking that away, they become mobilized.
I'm wondering if this might put the governor, again, should he run, in kind of a similar position in some ways to the position that Mitt Romney found himself in regarding health care in Massachusetts, that he'll have to make some kind of argument across the nation that it was right and appropriate for New York State, but I'm not going to try to do this across the whole country.
It's going to be interesting. I think you might have a correct analogy there. And whether it was right for New York State remains to be seen, quite frankly. I think as people read this this monstrosity of a bill, there's a large perception out there that there are many problems with it, not the least of which is they did forget to exclude law enforcement officers from the magazine limitation. So technically, law enforcement should be loading 7 rounds until they can add a chapter amendment to the bill. Otherwise, they're breaking the new law. But, if you pass something that's completely negotiated behind closed doors, goes to the Senate Rules Committee at 10:30 at night, passes the Senate at 11, neither body having one word or sentence of debate on the issue, this isn't something you're proud of. It's a fast one, and everyone knows it from the governor on down. And I think it's going to be problematic. You have a lot of people out there talking about the mental health provisions. The health community right now is just realizing what has been mandated to do. They're very concerned about those provisions, and I think preventing the mentally insane from owning a firearm is something everybody can pretty much agree on. How you get there is up for debate, and I think what this bill does is puts a huge liability on nurses, doctors, and mental health professionals that gives very little guidance in the bill other than you must report. It's going to, I think, probably cause two things to happen. One, people that do own firearms may be more reluctant to seek mental health help should they need it. And two, it may prompt over-reporting by the medical and mental health community as a way to cover their own backs on liability issues. There's a lot of holes in this bill because it was clearly had been planned for a while, but having no expert testimony, not a single hearing in committee, not reaching out to any third-party advocates on either side of the issue to give public discourse on this bill has created a Frankenstein of gun control wants that has turned out to be very, very bad law. A number of sheriffs are out there using the word unconstitutional. They're independently elected officials and, in the eyes of the New York State Constitution, actually the highest law enforcement official in each county. When you get those guys talking about a bill's unconstitutional and impossible to enforce and adjudicate, you've got some problems, and those are going to work themselves out over the next few months, I'm sure.
Let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Dad Taxi.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Worst trait is I'm a terrible administrator with paperwork.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
I think the ability to connect with people on matters of public policy and change minds. It's not an easy thing to do, but we seem to have discovered a niche in how to do it.
That was Scott Armstrong. Scott, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.